Well, how did anyone get in? You see, Evans is positive that all the doors were locked when he left the house earlier. And I don't see your uncle letting anyone in. Unless he knew him.
Did you come all this way just to tell me that?
Well, I thought you'd be interested. Mike, I did clear up one routine thing. You know that gallery you went to? Checked out. Hope you don't mind.
Oh, that's your job. And?
The parking lot boy, he remembered when you got there, all right. So that if Mr. Matthews was killed at 11 o'clock, then you sure didn't do it.
Now, isn't that a shame, Lieutenant? And here I am, your best and most obvious suspect, too.
Oh, don't say things like that. Really, you got me all wrong.
Oh, yeah.
It's just that I get bugged by those little things. I'm going to tell you something. Do you know that there is a reasonable explanation for everything if you just put your mind to it? Of course, sometimes these things, you know, pop up. Like with alibis. Do you know, in most cases, people, they don't remember what time it is. They forget all that. Like the artist fella. He's all mixed up about the time. Now, with you, Mr. Kingston, it's just the opposite. Very unusual. With you, we know exactly where you were and when.
Yes, isn't that nice?
Welcome back to License to Spiel. I'm Carl Wonders.
And I'm Thad Haight.
Today we're going to be talking about episode 4 of the first season of Columbo, the amusingly and appropriately titled Suitable for Framing.
The very first episode of Columbo I ever saw. Carl showed me this to try to get me into Columbo and it worked. I remember like maybe a third of the way through, I'm just like, so is this every episode he just toys with the murderer because he already knows what happened?
The short answer is yes. Not every episode, but most of them.
Yes.
He gets a very good sense of who did it pretty early on. I remember thinking, trying to figure out which episode, if you hadn't seen any of them, to show you. And it's still one of my favorites, I think, especially of the early ones. It's really
good,
I think.
It's a good episode, yeah.
This episode stars Ross Martin as the killer, who, among his many other attributes, has an impeccable fashion sense. Strolling in here in the opening scene.
That blue velvet suit is certainly a thing.
Blue velvet tuxedo.
Yep, with enormous cufflinks.
Yes. Well, they're important because he claims to lose one later.
Right, so that because he needs to have indisputable proof that where he was at 11:15.
Correct. It opens up, he walks Ross Martin, who plays Dale Kingston, who apparently is a famous art critic, which I didn't know was a thing.
I did not either.
Just strolls into the living room here with his uncle playing the piano and pulls out a revolver and shoots him within the first minute, I would guess, of the episode running.
Yeah. Which I was watching an episode of Murder, She Wrote last night. Mm-hmm. And find the body or hear about the murder until like 14 minutes into the show.
Yeah.
And that's a shorter show than this.
Yeah. That's true. Yeah, they play around with that a lot. Some episodes you have a long setup.
Yeah, and obviously we're talking completely different kinds of shows because Columbo, you always know who does it. Yes. Murder, She Wrote, you never know who does it until Jessica reveals all these tiny things that you never noticed.
Yeah, I will correct you in that there is an episode of Columbo where you don't know who did it, and it's actually one of the worst ones. So,
okay. I thought you were going to say there's an episode of Murder, She Wrote where you know who did it. And I'm like, is there?
Well, it's Jessica Fletcher.
It's the well, yes.
And we see Dale Kingston get out this electric blanket and wrap his uncle's body in it.
That's clever.
I don't know if that works in real life, but I think it's clever. And you know exactly what he's doing.
Yeah, because I feel like it would affect the temperature, but it wouldn't affect the other things like lividity and such. But that said, anytime you watch a forensic show, they do talk about, oh, the core temperature means that they died at this time. So, yeah, it might.
Well, and we're only talking about a difference of maybe an hour or so anyway.
Right.
So it's not like we're trying to pretend that this murder happened a day later or something like that.
Right.
That would be kind of gross.
Leave the body in an electric blanket for a day.
Yeah, right. murder victim appears to have been sous vide.
In a day, you would probably not do that, but
no,
yeah.
It's not that warm. I mean, I don't know how warm the electric blanket is.
That's true.
Because my steak cooks at 120 degrees in about 3 hours, so.
You would not want an electric blanket that gets to 120 degrees.
No, you wouldn't.
Also, I don't think you could plug an electric blanket that gets to 120 degrees into a 110-volt outlet.
When it invariably shorts out.
Yes, the old wire, the wiring in that can probably only handle, can probably not handle the amperage needed to do 100. But also, you wouldn't want an electric blanket to do 120 degrees. No, that's how you die.
Yes.
There's a reason hot tubs don't let you go higher than 104.
Yep. I saw that one Halloween movie.
I saw Dante's Peak.
Okay. That's a good one, yeah. I like here he's staging a robbery. He's wrecking the house. He scratches up the lock to the sliding door, and then he steals these two paintings.
Yes.
They're not paintings, they're pastel artwork.
And he really shouldn't have, because that sets off Columbo's radar right away.
It does. I don't know who Birnbaum is, but
neither do I, but I'm not a famous art critic. Right. But here's the thing. If his plan was to frame the ant all along, which I assume it was,
mm-hmm.
Why bother stealing anything? Because if the ant gets framed, successfully framed, he gets it all anyway.
Right.
And knowing that the ant is going to inherit, why would she steal it?
Well, she doesn't know.
Oh, that's right. You're right.
And the only thing I can think of is that he's stealing these so he can plant them in her house.
I guess.
But again, I don't know if had his plan gone according to plan, pardon the bad language there, I don't know if he would have needed to plant these things.
Yeah, that's true.
I mean, I do give him credit. This is one of those ones where even though you see the murder happen, you think you know what's going on, and then right around the third act, you realize that something else is happening completely that you weren't really expecting.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it works pretty well. I think the twist works where...
What I found interesting and sort of amusing is he shoots his uncle, and then the camera just cuts these close-ups of all the faces in the paintings.
Yes.
Like, oh no, he just shot somebody!
Yep. And there's other ones when they're like judging him for stealing the artwork and stuff. Mm-hmm. And there's like all these faces staring at him. And yeah, I made a mention of this movie later, but that also reminds me a bit of Knives Out, where you have that big portrait of Christopher Plummer that's like sneering at everybody for most of the movie. I think there's a bit of Knives Out in this episode.
Well, I think the other way probably, but yes.
Oh, yes. Okay. Fair. There's this. Yes. That's what I meant to say. Anyway. Yeah, Rian Johnson was inspired by this episode.
Yes.
Like, even to the point here, where, like, I like he gets his girlfriend, whom he's, as is often the case, using to commit crime. He has her run away so that the night watchman hears high heels on the steps and thinks that there's a woman running away, which then plays into the framing later. Because at first, the first time I remember watching this the first time and thinking, like, oh, shoot, that's like the first clue that Columbo's going to latch onto, but it turns out that's intentional.
Yeah.
But yeah, Kingston's setting up his alibi by keeping the body warm while he goes off to this rather amusing art gallery and really plays up the pompous asshole routine, which I don't think is a routine for him, but.
No. I watching that part and like seeing him and all the people he's talking to, I'm like, man, if I hadn't just committed murder, this party would make me want to commit murder.
Yeah. This is a party I wouldn't want to go to.
No.
And we see our Star Trek connection for this episode. Jojo Krakow here is the struggling artist, Sam Franklin.
Who really should just accept the fact that he's going bald and not do that incredibly terrible attempt at a comb over. A comb forward, I guess?
I was going to say, it's like combed straight forward. And that paisley shirt he's wearing is also a choice.
I feel like the paisley shirt's better than the tank top he wears later.
Well, yeah, for various reasons.
Now, the dress the gallery owner is wearing, I have no defense of that shower curtain.
I was going to say she was auditioning to play the friendly angel in Star Trek, the children shall lead.
And yes, he makes a point of asking what time it is so that, I'm sorry, I said 11:15 earlier, because so that everyone knows it's 5 to 11.
Yes.
So they all know he's there, and he did, and if he couldn't possibly have committed this murder.
Like, I feel like there are a couple instances where if he had just been a little more subtle, he would have gotten away with this.
Yes.
Like, you don't need to ask the parking lot attendant and the guest at the party and, like, maybe one other person what the time is.
But subtlety is not...
Not
really his thing.
When you wear a blue velvet tuxedo, you're not looking for subtlety. And here's where... And then his girlfriend is going to stage the... They want to think is the murder with the neighborhood security guy doing his rounds. I didn't realize that these guards, which I'm sure exist and they go around these fancy neighborhoods and everything, but do they have keys to the people's houses?
I mean, it would make sense if you're hiring this person to be the security that they would. Yeah. I don't know. I don't live in a fancy neighborhood with private security.
Yeah.
The cops, I assume, don't have a key to my house. I never gave them one. So not only does the security have the key, but like, I feel like it's very bad security practice that they come to the house at the exact same time every night.
Yeah.
Like, in this instance, the reason they're able to do this is because they know he's coming at that exact time. But also, if you were just breaking in and robbing, you would know, then you might know he's coming at that time and just be there at a different time.
Don't go at 11 o'clock.
Right.
That brown carpeting is gross.
Well, it's the 70s.
Yeah. I mean, it's not the most offensive carpeting we've seen, or rug we've
it's
seen.
It's olive, I think.
Is that's it olive?
Not, yeah, that's olive. Which makes sense for the 70s.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's definitely olive.
Okay.
The house I grew up in had carpeting like that in the living room. Eventually, my mother got tired of all the disgusting carpeting, pulled it all up, and discovered beautiful hardwood floors under all of them.
So that's a nice surprise.
Yeah.
We had pink shag carpeting in our bathroom when I was little.
We also had a carpeted bathroom when I was young. It was, it wasn't pink shag. Shag in a bathroom, it sounds like a terrible idea. It was like a dark, ours was like a dark blue, like very, like sort of like, office building type carpeting.
Okay.
But even so, we ended up getting that ripped out at some point too, because yeah, just gross. And I will say not my first apartment, but the townhouse I rented before I bought my house had plush carpeting in the bathroom. It wasn't shag. It was modern. Like, it had just recently been recarpeted, but it was very soft, very plush. And I will say, as gross as this sounds, it was super great when getting out of the shower.
Mm. Yeah. Oof.
It was nice not to have cold floors in the bathroom.
Okay.
But yeah. Yeah, no, and this was a rental. I never had a bath mat. I just stepped straight from the shower onto the carpet.
Oh, no.
It never smelled.
Okay.
I would not do that in my own house, but in my own house, I don't have carpet in the bathroom. I have vinyl on the floor in my bathroom in my house because I'm poor. But and it's like one of like six layers of vinyl. I mean, because, you know, it's a 100-year-old house. Yep. But still, the floor in my upstairs bathroom is like a good inch taller than the floor in the hall that you step onto.
I wonder if there's a layer of linoleum in there, too.
Oh, I'm sure there is. But speaking of old houses and flooring.
Yep. Here's Columbo on the scene, already cluing into things like, gee, why didn't the thief steal this painting and this painting by these artists who I assume are famous, but I don't know them?
I appreciate that someone actually stopped him from lighting up indoors for once.
Yeah. Mr. Matthews was very finicky about smoking or something like that. I mean, it is a lot of expensive art in there. I completely get it.
Yeah, like, putting aside the health risks that they didn't really know about, there's so much residue when you smoke a lot inside that, like, again, old house things, there are definite, you can see where in my living room, because I have not bothered to paint it yet in the 10 years I've lived here, you can see a couple spots where there used to be artwork that the previous owners had that I don't have something with quite the same size there anymore. And it's a couple shades, the wall was a couple shades lighter there.
Yeah, I was going to say, so it's, you have white walls, but there are some parts that are more white than
thankfully
the rest.
Not white walls. They are still tan. They're like a tan, like almost, they did that sponge texture thing to make it look old and
yep.
Yeah. So even in this case, in those cases, it still doesn't look too bad. But you can tell that there was that the people who lived here smoked inside a lot.
The sponge texture probably hides that a lot too.
Yeah.
Actually.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
But not completely. And that's why, like, it's just so gross that people smoked indoors. Mm-hmm. I know we talk about this every episode, but.
And probably will. So, because they're still going to be smoking indoors.
Yeah.
And he recreates the woman running away by having a woman cop run down the stairs.
Mm-hmm. That's what the guard heard.
That's what the guard heard. Must have been high heels. I don't think I appreciated this tuxedo jacket quite as much before it became high def, but I'm sorry.
Yeah, instead, I mean, you could probably still tell what it was
in
SD, but yeah, it is. It's a thing. But that was the style. Like, velvet tuxedo jackets, like, it's not like he's the only one that wear. A lot of people wore those back then.
It's very Austin Powers, actually.
Mm-hmm. Well, especially that makes sense.
With the frills on the shirt.
And that was what tuxedos, a style of tuxedo that was very common back then.
Yep.
Even think about Harry Potter for a second. Okay. I know this seems like an odd segue, but.
Ron's jacket?
Ron's dress robes, yes. For the Yule Ball, he has to get the hand-me-down robes, and he, and if you'll notice, they are velvet, and he also cuts the lace off the shirt.
Yeah, I remember that.
So yeah, that's just a sign that, like, that was the style at one time.
Mm-hmm.
It's just not anymore. But it was, at the time, it was groovy, baby.
Columbo goes in to talk to the gallery owner, stumbles in on Sam Franklin painting a woman in the nude, and he's doesn't quite know what to do with himself about this.
I enjoy that.
Yeah. Sam Franklin does not shave his back. A question that we've been asking for a long time about Sean Connery, but this is the first time we find out about him, Columbo being questioning the fact that these people know exactly when Dale Kingston was there.
Yes.
And he tipped the guy $2 to park his car.
That was quite a tip back then.
Yeah.
I'll be honest, I don't know what you tip someone who parks your car. I don't have
people park my car.
Drive to places where someone else parks my car.
No.
I have literally never done that. Like, there has a valet has never in my life, in the entire time that I've owned a car, a valet has never parked my car. So I have no idea what you tip someone for that. But I'm assuming in 1971, $2 was a lot.
Must be, yeah. I mean, everyone remarks at it, so.
And that's, again, he's doing that so the guy remembers him.
Right, of course. So apparently Dale Kingston is on a TV program where he says some interesting things in this TV program.
Painting the ladies and gentlemen of the Spanish court with a savage brush, relentlessly, unremittingly showing them in every detail, down to the tiniest wart. But when you take the W off of wart, you are still left with art. And Goya was the penultimate artist. We will continue our discussion of this fascinating artist tomorrow. Copies of today's lecture may be obtained for a nominal fee by writing to this station. This is Dale Kingston. Good afternoon.
My favorite is when you take the W off wart, you are still left with art.
Yes. And then he calls Goya the penultimate artist, which is not what that means.
No. Also, I love that obviously in the 70s, you wouldn't have been able to tell this because the entire thing would have been the quality of a standard definition CRT TV.
Mm-hmm.
But that is clearly not a television image on that TV.
No. That is a rotoscope. In fact, in my copy of it, it's much sharper than the television around it.
Yes, it is.
I mean, as we discussed the other couple episodes ago, I don't think you could just film a television playing an image because then it would have
the frame rate issues. Yeah. You would need a camera that's synced to the refresh rate of the television. At this point in time, they were able to record directly. They recorded directly to videotape. They no longer stored television programs by pointing a camera at the TV screen. But
no.
Yeah, you would need a special type of camera that would be synced to the frame rate if you needed to do that.
Well, and we know that they store them because you can get a copy of his lecture for a nominal fee by writing to the station.
I wonder what that nominal fee was.
I don't know.
Because that would have been it would be on reel to reel. It would be like a film reel. You'd put it on a projector. Because 71 they didn't have VCRs. It would have been an actual roll of film that you would get. It would be on a reel that you would snap it onto your home projector that you use for watching home movies.
Like the one that they wheeled into my elementary class all the time.
Yes. Also, I sometimes got that in my elementary school, too, because I went to a tiny private school that still used old stuff. So, yes, we had that, too. But yes. Yeah, exactly. Like, because that's the only thing it could. At least this TV has two antennae. I will give it that.
Yeah.
This is a normal TV. It is only a VHF TV, I notice.
Which is interesting.
When did UHF come out? Since 1962, UHF channels were required in television receivers by the All Channel Receiver Act. So that's a 10-year-old TV, I guess.
Yeah, because there's only one dial on it.
Yeah, yeah, no, it's definitely, and it only goes to... That's a VHF dial because it's one dial. Well, one dial it would be, but yeah, it only goes to 12 or 14 or however many. Yeah, 14 I think was VHF. No, sorry, 13. But it's a TV from older than 1962, which means it's unlikely that the TV that they're actually using as this prop is a color TV.
I was just thinking that now. Yeah.
But yeah, that is definitely not a TV signal on that TV. And that TV is almost certainly black and white.
And I'm pretty sure that it's just a lock-off still shot of a TV.
Oh, yeah.
There.
It definitely is.
Rotoscoping in, yeah.
No, because that's a film shot. It's way too detailed. There's no scan lines. It's not. Nope. That is not a TV image.
No, it is not. No. I'm talking about the actual framing is just a lock-off shot.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Just,
you know.
I don't even think they bothered to curve the image on the edges. If
they didn't, no.
Yeah.
There's no distortion. It's just flat. But that's okay.
Again, these are things you would not have been able to see
in
the 70s because it would obviously the quality couldn't be any better than you would see on a TV when you were watching it on a TV.
Well, and so many people watching this now would not even think that, that image should be distorted because the glass was curved.
Because they wouldn't have any frame of reference for that. Yeah.
Exactly. Like, yeah.
And honestly, even those of us that do, it's been so damn long.
Yeah.
I was recently watching The West Wing because it came out on Blu-ray recently and I was going through it. And there was a scene where someone turns off a TV and you hear that sort of like high-pitched noise that the tubes made when they turned off. And that like triggered a memory for me because I had forgotten about that noise. I had no memory until I heard it. I'm like, oh yeah, that was a thing.
I remember the hum when you turn it on.
Oh yeah.
And you could get a static shock from the TV.
So I will say, at least his girlfriend, at least instead of having a pitcher of ice water sitting on her bar, has an enormous ice bucket.
Like, yeah, did people back then just somehow keep their ice out in ice buckets like that and always have it readily available? Because
I guess.
I feel like if I had an ice bucket like that, within a few hours, I'd just have a puddle of water in it.
Right? I mean, That's how it's always worked in hotel rooms for me.
Yeah.
I wonder if it's because they didn't have a lot of space for ice in their freezers like we do today. Maybe. So, yeah. Like, they would take their ice cube tray and dump it in the ice bucket and then put the ice cube tray back in the freezer.
Yeah, we always had just, like, two little ice cube trays on that little shelf in the freezer when I was
Growing up. My mother doesn't like ice water, so we just never had it. We always drank room temperature water. I find it interesting, like, every... Okay, I do have a bar in my house, but not everyone does. But it seems like in Colombo, everyone has a bar.
Even the people who are of less wealth,
right?
Like his girlfriend here.
And I'm not trying to say that I'm wealthy and that I have a bar. I don't drink a lot, but when I do drink, I like to drink nice things. But like, it seems like it's a fixture in everyone's house in Colombo that they will have a bar with. And again, I wasn't alive in the 70s, and I may be coming from this a different way because my parents don't really drink. But growing up, I don't remember everyone having a bar.
No, my parents certainly did not. I mean, we had a liquor cabinet that was built in under the stairs, but it was not. And at least in her case, it's more like a piece of furniture that she has like decanters and things on. And her TV she has her telephone and some other things on it. So it's just a piece of furniture she's purposing as a bar. It's not,
I feel like
it's not the walk, it's not the walk behind kind of thing with stools.
Yeah. I feel like we see phones on the bar a lot.
Yep. Well, it makes sense because it's easy to walk over and pick up a phone and you don't have to like tilt the camera. Like everything's at height. So I can understand why you would do that. You get this weird phone cart though at the studio, which I'm sure is a thing, but I doubt that it's actually plugged into anything. Because she's trying to call Kingston and we forgot to mention that Columbo said, oh, this person that stole these paintings may want to call for ransom. So let's tap your, I'm just going to tap your phone. You don't have a problem with that, do you? And he's like, no, of course not. So he can't answer the phone when she calls.
I like that the little phone cart has a shelf in case you need to write down a note when you're
That's handy. Yeah. That's the phone that everybody had in their kitchen.
The princess phone.
Yeah. No. The vertically mounted rotary phone.
No, it looks smaller than that. It looks like it's a mounted princess phone almost. It could be a... okay. There were... The first princess phone was
rotary. It had dials, yeah.
I think it's just the... The little alcove makes it look smaller than it is. Yeah, you're right. I think it is. My family had that in what did they call that shade of yellow that
was... Harvest Gold.
Yes.
That's what we had too. Harvest Gold phone.
I remember we finally got rid of it when we switched to touch tone dialing in the late 90s.
We had it even when they had touchtone dialing in the 90s.
Well, touchtone dialing existed earlier than that, but my parents didn't pay for it.
No, we didn't have it either. Like we had the pulse dialing.
Yeah. My parents switched to touchtone dialing in the late 90s, and that's when they got rid of it. That's when we retired the rotary phone. Yeah, so guys talking to Columbo at the studio.
I like Columbo brings one of the pictures he saw in Sam Franklin's apartment. And he's like, what do you think of this? And he thinks it's terrible. And he's like, that's what I thought. But why would you go to their showing if you thought their art was terrible? It's like, I get paid to write terrible, like reviews of terrible art, basically, is his excuse here, which I believe.
I mean, that makes perfect sense to me.
It does. Yeah. And this is when Columbo gets on his nerves to the point he's like, do you want to search my house? And he gives him his key and like, go check out my house all you want. Go. Because he said I wanted to borrow some books or something. And
yeah.
And Kingston is just fed up and wants to get rid of him. And like, here, take my key. Go see how I live. Which leads to that really wonderful scene that I love when he comes home and Columbo's like passed out in his chair.
Yes. But before that happens, he kills his girlfriend.
Oh, yes. Yeah. Didn't see that coming. No, I didn't.
Need
actually,
to stop killing other people. That makes it so much easier for you to get caught.
More murdering.
Because the guy with the lake house, if he hadn't killed the lady from the general store, he probably would have gotten away with it.
Probably. Well, I mean, she was blackmailing him.
Yeah, but still, he could have paid her. He had plenty of money.
True.
The chair that Columbo's passed out in is a very of its era chair.
I like it, though. It looks comfortable.
It does. It looks more comfortable than that half-height black thing that's next to it.
Yeah.
I can't imagine that's comfortable with its straight sides.
What's that, like, lumpy... Oh, I guess it's a sofa. Never mind.
Yeah, that's a couch. I had the exact same
thought. I didn't see the arm until Kingston moved.
But it has a big cushion at the bottom. Like, that couch has more lumbar support than I've ever seen on a couch. Okay, no, that was just the angle of the shot. Once you see the arm, it does look better.
Yeah.
Okay.
But no, when he's standing in front of the arm, I was like, what is that thing?
There are at least four ashtrays in this room. There's one on the table next to Columbo's chair. There's one next to the black chair. There's one next to the couch. And there's one on the desk.
People smoked a lot back then.
And everywhere, apparently.
And I've never seen, I don't think we ever see Dale Kingston smoke.
No. Oh, I'm sorry. Five ashtrays. There's one on the bar.
Who, again, he has a bar.
Okay, but this guy would absolutely.
This guy would have a bar, yeah.
But no, I get that people smoke inside, but do you really smoke so much and so all over the place that you have an ashtray next to every seat in your house?
I mean, I vaguely remember my parents having some ashtrays in the house, but I don't remember them being everywhere like that, like that many of them.
We definitely did not. If someone came to the house and wanted to smoke, they would be directed outside.
Okay.
I don't think it ever happened. I don't remember anyone ever asking to smoke inside our house when I was a kid.
All right, so actual question for you on this, and I don't know if you'll remember because it's been a while since we watched this together. Mm-hmm. Did you pick up on him reaching into the attaché thing the first time you saw this, like that was something?
Not that it was something. I remembered it, and when he said, when he said he was looking for fingerprints, mm-hmm. before he realized he said it was for his, I knew that's what he meant.
Okay. Because I love this setup where mm-hmm. Kingston comes back to this house and he has, you know, the stolen artwork in that attaché. And he says, oh, I just have these paintings I have to evaluate or whatever. And Columbo wants to see them and he reaches in and tries to pull them out.
Yeah. And
obviously, that's a key point later as we were talking. We're talking. But yeah, it's I feel like nowadays they would have like hung a lantern on that moment.
Mm-hmm.
Like zoom in on him reaching into the thing or something.
Give us a musical cue.
Yeah.
What are the white globes?
Are they lamps? The ones hanging from the ceiling?
No, the ones on poles coming up from the floor. Are they lamps? Next to the door. The scene where Columbo leaves. The shot where Columbo's cooking up the door. Yeah, those
look like floor lamps.
I guess.
It's another instance of people having weird shrubbery in their house.
I appreciate that half of our discussion in every one of these is just how absurd these houses are. Speaking of absurd things, the size of that fleur-de-lis brooch on the aunt's jacket.
That is something. It is very fitting her character, though.
Yes.
Yeah, we get Dr. Zaius, not Dr. Zaius, what's her name? From Planet of the Apes. What was her character's name?
Oh,
Zira.
Zira, yes.
Zira. Yeah, Zira from Planet of the Apes here is Tim Hunter.
We had somebody who was in Planet of the Apes last week, too, didn't we? Who was in battle for Planet of the Apes
last week. Yeah, that's right. They were in battle for the Planet of the Apes. The weird one, as you called it.
I mean... Okay, no, because she's also in one of the weird ones, Escape from Planet of the Apes.
I like that one.
It's still weird.
That one has Robert or William Wyndham in it, too.
It does. Is he in Columbo?
I don't think so. No, he was. He was in the first episode of Columbo. Remember, he was the guy's friend.
Oh, okay. Was he the guy that gets shot? He's the
no,
victim?
No. He's no the guy who murdered his wife and strangled her and then left on vacation.
Oh, the movie. I was thinking
the movie. First, no, the movie.
Sorry, I was thinking the Lake House one. Okay, with others.
No. And the original pilot.
Gotcha. That's right. He was. Yeah. Okay.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yep.
You know, it's kind of weird, but you can actually tell that it's her from Planet of the Apes. Like, it feels like you shouldn't be able to.
I mean, she speaks in both of these.
But she also looks like her.
I mean, it is just makeup, after all.
Yeah. Makeup. I suppose fair. It's like the first time I ever saw Max Grudenchik without his makeup, and I'm like, holy shit, that's Rom.
Yeah. I mean, you can tell.
Right. That's what I'm saying.
Armin Shimerman, you can tell that's Quark.
Armin Shimerman, but not like as like not Rom like, is
not
just,
like Max Grudenchik.
Max Grudenchik is so obviously Rom. Armin Shimerman, yes, he's got the Quark look, but like it feels like a lot of what makes Rom's face, a lot more of what makes Rom's face face exists in Max Grudenchik than
yes.
Yeah,
I will give you that. Oh yeah, so while he was at Dale Kingston's apartment, he gets a phone call that they find the girlfriend dead. And he goes and brings the painting that she was working on to the lawyer's office here. And Kingston acts like he has no idea who it is.
Mm-hmm. Even though it's his, yeah.
Yeah. I like that we get Don Amici here as the lawyer for some reason. Why not? So the will gives the two housekeepers $2,000 a year forever, I guess. And everything goes to Dale Kingston except for the artwork.
So then in the next scene, his tie. Oh boy, that is, it's like a tablecloth.
it's like they're trying to make an ascot and made a tie by mistake.
Yeah, no, I was about to say, it's like they tied an ascot with a Windsor or something. Yeah. I think that's either a half Windsor or a full Windsor knot. I think it might be a full Windsor, which would make sense with a tie that big.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's a single Windsor knot.
Or half Windsor, you mean?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, I think so. I used to tie a half Windsor when I thought that was like, I thought I was being cooler. Cool.
Yeah.
So, in addition to the tie.
Yep.
The dress shirt. I'm like okay with the dress shirt until I realize that it's not just blue and white striped. It's blue, white, and yellow striped.
That matches his tie.
That matches his tie, which, okay, I'll give him points for coordination, but that's an ugly shirt.
On the flip side, I don't hate his jacket, although it looks like a furniture pad.
The jacket's fine.
Yeah.
I will always respect a man who wears a vest. I think vests look cool. I don't think I can pull off the vest look, but because I feel like the larger your stomach, the less you want to call attention to it with a vest. But the vest looks good.
Yeah. And I like this twist here that we find out that he knew all along he wasn't getting the art.
Yes. So then Columbo goes to visit the landlady.
Mm-hmm. And this is a scene that was added because the show is running short on time.
Which makes sense because the scene is wholly unnecessary.
It's wholly unnecessary, but it's fun because this landlady decides to go through her photo album and talk Columbo's ear off.
Which I love because you can see him getting visibly annoyed the way other people do whenever he's talking.
Yes.
For whatever reason, she reminds me of the Margaret Thatcher impersonator from that one James Bond movie. I mean, I assume it's just the hairstyle, but
I mean pretty much everything about her though.
It's not though. Like I looked her up.
Oh, you did? Okay. Yeah. And then here, the gardener for Kingston's aunt finds something amiss here in the shrubbery.
Does spraying water on your plants from 4 to 5 p.m. actually kill aphids? I feel like that seems unlikely.
I feel like it would just damage your plants more than anything else. Why does Mrs. Matt... Do people just keep a bowl of grapes, like actual grapes, sitting out on a table?
On TV, they do.
I guess.
They're there in case James Bond wants to steal one.
Yes, there you go.
We have another green carpet.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, Columbo's talking to the aunt, and then...
Like, she and her ex-husband, the murder victim, were getting back together again and late in life, it seems like. And
that's why he put her in the will.
Presumably. And he wanted to get rid of the painting. He wanted to get rid of his art collection.
Yeah. So then Kingston shows up and makes a whole deal about how he doesn't want Columbo to go after his aunt. She can't possibly be the murderer. And, you know, methinks the man doth possess too much.
A little bit. Just a little bit.
Also, his shirt is different now because it is now... Oh, it's a different shirt. Never mind. It's a different shirt, yeah. Different tie. But it's also a striped blue and yellow.
It matches his tie. This is a better...
This is a better match. Better match. Yeah. I think it also matches the jacket better.
Yes, I agree with that too. Even though I grew up with grandparents who owned them, I'm always struck at how large these cars were back in the 70s.
I know, right?
This giant Cadillac that...
They called them boats for a reason.
Yeah.
Because gasoline was cheap.
Mm-hmm.
Because they were heavy and not aerodynamic. So, you know, no. They got, you know...
12 miles to the gallon or
12
so.
12 gallons to the mile.
12 gallons to the mile, yeah. They find the wrapping paper and clumsily thrown away in a trash can.
Because, you know, if you just murdered someone, that's what you'd do.
And I like Columbo's, like, if she really did murder this person, then she wouldn't have put it in the trash can. She'd have thrown it in the fireplace.
Mm-hmm. Fair point.
Mm-hmm.
Lucky it wasn't me, because they would have found half... Because if we're talking about our conversation from last week, they would have found half the body in the trash can when I searched mine.
Yes, that's right.
That's a little incriminating, I guess.
A little bit. Oh, we found a body in it. I mean, I guess he could have done that, but... I'm really going to frame her error by leaving half of Uncle Rudy in the trash can. And then Kingston goes to the lawyer and talks him into calling in some favors to get her house searched to clear her name. Again, you're trying a little too hard here.
Yep. I'm impressed with how big her linen closet is.
Mm,
like, yeah. It's an actual room. It's not just a closet.
Yeah. And, oh, Aunt Edna also has a bar.
They all do.
Like, is this a... This must be a bathroom with a linen closet in it, right?
But there's no door on the closet, right?
There is. There's, like, those wicker... Like, those slatted doors. Oh,
yeah, there are. Okay. Yeah, you're right. That makes sense. I've always thought it's, like... I understand the idea, but it's always seemed odd to me that you would want to store your towels in the bathroom. Because, like, you're... There's so much humidity in a bathroom. Like, that just feels like a bad idea. And here's where they find the pastels in the linen closet.
Mm-hmm. Columbo shows up and is like, I don't know what's going on. I didn't want them to search this. And he makes it seem like they've gone around him.
Mm-hmm. I do like that. And then he's like, yes, we know what you thought, Mr. Kingston.
Yes.
And then the best part, the absolute best part, when he's like, you touched those while I wasn't looking. And he just pulls his hands out of his pockets. He's wearing gloves and he shrugs. Yep. I love it so much.
So good.
All right, Lieutenant. You claim that I planted these paintings. Suppose you prove it. Can we?
Yeah.
With fingerprints. Sorry to disappoint you, Lieutenant. Fingerprints won't help you at all. My fingerprints are all over those paintings. My uncle and I unwrapped them when they came back from the exhibit. I told you, didn't I? I told you myself. They're covered with my prints. No, we're not looking for your prints.
What?
Do you remember the time that I was in your apartment and you came in with some paintings? And you said that they were watercolors and you wanted to evaluate them. And remember, I wanted to see them and you wouldn't let me. And I even touched them.
You touched
them? Yes, my fingerprints are on those paintings. Now, if Mrs. Matthews is guilty, how could my fingerprints get on paintings that she stole?
This is entrapment. It's a setup, that's all. You touched those paintings just now while I wasn't looking. You saw him do it, didn't you? You put your prints on those paintings while you were bent over watching them when they were working on it. He touched them.
And I'm glad that's where they end the episode, because you don't need any more.
Yeah, and I will say, the first time I watched this, as soon as he said they were dusting for fingerprints, I realized it was Columbo's. Like, before he said it, I realized it, because I remembered when he had touched before. But yeah, that's such a... It's so clever. Which is the whole point of Columbo.
Yeah, I mean, mad props to the fingerprint guy for being able to recognize Columbo's fingerprints on sight.
That's because Columbo's pulled the same stunt several times, probably.
But I mean, this is, at least I like that this is an example where Columbo doesn't commit ethical violations to solve the mystery necessarily. He's not planting evidence. He's not getting the guy to confess to anything.
He has actual evidence that would work in court.
I mean, I don't know how well it'll hold up that it's his word that he was in the guy's room, but then of course he also has his fingerprints on them, you know, so I think there's still an issue when you go to trial with this one. But yeah, that's, and I can't remember if it was Levinson or Link, one of them at one point said that was the best clue they ever had in the show, was the fingerprints. Because the writer on this one was somebody that they'd, when they did the first movie, they brought in a whole bunch of freelance writers and then explained to them how the show was to be structured, and a bunch of them bailed because they couldn't work within the parameters of the show, and he stayed on and ended up writing this one. He wasn't one of the staff people. He became a staff writer later, I think, but he wasn't one of the staff writers to start with. But yeah, suitable for framing.
Yeah, just excellent episode. Definitely the best one we've seen so far.
I agree. And this one was actually free of a lot of the behind the scenes shenanigans like we talked about last week with Columbo quitting and not being on set and everything. They actually filmed the next episode after this one. They filmed first before this one, which is part of why. And I think Columbo seems a lot more. This is probably one of my favorite Columbo performances, too, probably because he got his way and was pretty happy with his situation at this point when he filmed this one.
So that makes sense.
Yeah. And speaking of next week we are going to be looking at an episode called Lady in Waiting. Next week is the first time we've had a female murderer since the second TV pilot.
Ah, yes.
The Lee Grant episode. This is the one that has Leslie Nielsen in it.
I think I watched this episode, and then I think it's the last one I've watched.
Okay.
Because several years ago, we talked about how we might start doing Columbo, yes. And that's when I stopped watching.
Okay. Yeah, so then going forward, it's going to be all brand new watches after this episode. Nice. Thank you so much for listening to us this episode. If you'd like to contact us, you can find us on Blue Sky at Podspiel, PODSPIEL. You can also find this episode and all back episodes of our show on our website, licensetospiel.com. That's license with a C. You can also find me on Blue Sky at Listening to Film.
And you can find me at Tyrannicus. That's TYRANICUS.
All right. So do you have anything else to say about this episode?
No, I don't think so. Like I said, I think this was my intro to Columbo, and I think it is a really good example of what Columbo is about.
I have very few nits to pick with the story in this one. I think it's a pretty solid plan that the murderer has, and it's interesting the way Columbo unravels it. And again, that last gotcha moment is pretty perfect. So yeah, that's this episode. Next time we will be discussing Lady in Waiting.